Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Again, to another edition of what I call American Exposé. I'm Chris Gerner speaking to you on the 26th of July, 2005. The mess continues. We have different directions that are very, very ominous and prominent on the website, AmericanExposé.com. Dennis is back with his devastating information. Drought devastates crops in U.S. Midwest. We have full coverage of world news. We have consumer confidence falls on job worries. We have U.S. lawmakers could mix Chinese oil takeover bid. Nix it, I say. Greenspan praises China currency change. Globalization, what on earth is it about, from BBC News. And then sights to see. And you go all the way down to 50 years is enough network. And certainly everything that I bypass here is very vital information. But IMF, World Bank, 50 years is enough. Ah, people, this is a perfect example of the Hegelian dialectic in place as you research this portion of the website. It's a U.S. network for global economic justice, which is a coalition of over 200 U.S. grassroots women's solidarity, faith-based policy, social, and economic justice youth, labor, and development organizations dedicated to the profound transformation of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Ah, oh my. The UN inside the UN. The network works in solidarity with over 185 international partner organizations in more than 65 countries. What are we talking about here? The UN system. They say through education and action, the network is committed to transforming the international financial institutions' policies and practices to ending the outside opposition, imposition of neoliberal economic programs and to make the development process democratic and accountable. They say they were founded in 1994, 2 years after the implementation of Agenda 21, listeners, on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the founding of the World Bank and IMF, and that was the Bretton Woods Agreement in 1944, which brought about the IMF and the Bank for Reconstruction and Development. That's the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, henceforth the World Bank. They focus on the action-oriented economic literacy training, public mobilization, and public advocacy. Much to research here. Incredible information that Dennis has found. I'm speechless when I looked at this today. And certainly we connect the dots to the IMF and all this and the front of the website at the very top. Darren's information, my information, Mugabe to China as UN dams clean up. We have other information in here, but yet tonight we want to promote the new portion of the website, Solutions. And the new entry, the first entry for Solutions, is Dave Wilson in Arkansas, and Dave's with me tonight. Welcome to the broadcast, Dave.
Good evening, Chris. It's wonderful to be with you, and thanks for asking me.
Well, we have to work together, and your tireless efforts to regain sovereignty for individuals needs to be heard. So I'm going to just turn the mic over to you and let you kind of give them a little snippet of your direction and documentation, Dave.
Okay, well, how about for openers, I'll ask a question. Can I be compelled by specific performance to be a member of any body politic against my consent?
You can if you sign the right papers.
If I volunteer.
Right.
But can I be compelled without my consent to be a member of a body politic?
I don't think so.
No. Not only no, but heck no.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay. So, you know, we've heard many IRS commissioners in the past make public statements that our tax system is voluntary.
Yes, very good point.
Well, why is that? Why are they saying that? Well, I would say that the Constitution is quite clear. There are two grand classes of taxes, direct and indirect. Okay?
Right.
Well, any direct tax must be apportioned among the states, okay? Now, indirect taxes would be termed like ex post, impost taxes and duties and so on. And indirect taxes must be uniform through the country. But here again, too, what exclusive legislative jurisdiction does the United States Congress have?
Washington, D.C. and its territories.
Yes, sir. Possessions and enclaves. That's called the federal zone. And I would highly recommend the listeners check out Paul Andrew Mitchell's website, supremelaw.org. He wrote the book, The Federal Zone, Cracking the Code of Internal Revenue. He wrote that back in 92. It's now in probably the 11th revision. It's on this website. You can download it for free. And there are 26 appendices to that.
That's supremelaw.org?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Right. Now, Congress only has exclusive legislation in Washington, D.C., possession territories, enclaves, okay?
Right.
I think everybody would agree with that, okay?
Those that are awake.
Right. Right. Or those that even care. And there is, I've seen a great, as you have, a great amount of apathy in this country.
Oh, boy.
Like if they have their six-pack and their season tickets to the ball game, they think they're free.
Correct.
Well, if they're so free, then why are they working half the year for the government?
And the wife having to employ herself,
yes,
as well.
Right, right. And that's no accident. That's by design.
Yes, it is.
It started, I guess, with Rosie the Riveter in the Second World War there. That was one way to bust the families up, wasn't it?
It certainly was, and that whole pattern of the 20th century smokescreen is very apparent today.
You bet. Well, I think Americans, in my opinion, are born free. That's their birthright. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There are two classes of citizens in this country, federal citizen and a state citizen, and they have distinct and different so-called privileges and immunities. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If one declares oneself to be a federal citizen, and how can that be accomplished? Two of the best ways I know of that one declares himself to be a federal citizen is by signing their name under penalty of perjury on a voter registration application, as they are a citizen of the United States. Here in Arkansas, that's the way it used to read. Now it reads, that's about 3 years ago, it reads now, are you a citizen of the United States of America? Well, what's going on here? Because those are two separate entities. And we know that the United States is defined in Title 28 of the United States Code, which is judiciary and judicial proceedings, is defined as a federal corporation. Well, I started learning all these legal definitions of words and terms and so on, and I said, whoa, wait a minute. I'm not a citizen of some corporation. No, thank you. So I corrected my status by creating certain paperwork, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that paperwork went to the Commissioner of Social Security. It went to the Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service. It went to the Governor and the Director of the State Revenue Commission. So my status is state citizen in the capacity of sui juris. What does that mean? It's a Latin phrase for meaning in my own right, having no legal disabilities and being competent to manage my own affairs. Okay? So what actually is happening when people, let's just say when they were 14 like I was, and I wanted to go to work, and I got a W-4 shoved at me and said, well, you got to sign this, and so on and so forth. You got to have a Social Security number to go to work.
Right.
That was nothing but a bald-faced lie, because there is no law anywhere requiring one to have a Social Security number except for aliens entering the U.S. legally and otherwise, let's just say, American citizens requesting benefits, okay?
Right.
Well, I went to renew my driver's license back in 2001, and I had rescinded my Social Security number, and when I called up to renew, they said, well, you got to disclose your Social Security number. I said, I don't have one, and they said, you have to disclose your Social Security number, and there's no waiver. Call Little Rock. So I did. They confirmed, and that triggered about a 10-page notice demanding default. Well, they didn't respond, so they defaulted. And
now let's get into that. Who's doing the paperwork there?
I did.
Okay, now there's where the crux comes in, doesn't it?
Yes.
There's where your years of education comes in.
Well, one of the biggest problems as I see it in America today is the fact that most people just plainly don't know how to respond, Chris.
There you go.
Whether it's pulled over for a taillight out or may I search your vehicle or any of that kind of garbage.
Right.
They just don't know how to respond. And the failure to object is fatal to your freedoms and your liberties. And the failure to object timely is equally fatal. So it behooves one, if one claims to be free or wants to be free, to learn some legal definitions. And these are words of deception that are used by these law writers. They're all bar members.
Uh-huh.
And I call them word wizards engaged in semantic sorcery.
Word wizards engaged in semantic sorcery.
Or sophistry, either one
mm-hmm.
fits.
Mm-hmm.
Either one fits very well. And these words of deception have strict legal meanings, and I'm talking about common everyday words that one would never guess what the legal meaning might be. And one of the most famous ones they use is the word person. And where do you suppose that word person comes from? It goes back to ancient Rome. Person, it was a mask that an actor wore on the stage to hide his true identity.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ouch,
yeah. And when you read in the, like the tax codes and everything, person means, first word is individual, and then generally corporations, associations, partnerships, et cetera, and on down the line. And even the state of Arkansas is considered a person. That makes it a corporation, does it not?
Yeah.
Legal fiction. Person is a legal fiction. And when you see laws written that says state includes da-da-da-da-da, after that, okay, anytime you see that word includes or include, it means that all the words following that must fall into the same class of objects or whatever. In other words, it might be helpful to remember it. Well, citrus fruits include grapefruit, lemons, limes, apples. Uh-oh, they cannot include apples because it's out of that class. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's important to learn how to read law, but the important thing is to know and to understand the legal definitions of the words and the terms. How about United States? Well, that's defined, as we said, in Title 28 as a federal corporation. And that section, or that part of Title 28, has to do with a collection of income taxes and stuff, taxations and so on.
Uh-huh.
But it's interesting to note that the term United States disappeared from Black's Law Dictionary 7th edition.
What was that again?
The term United States?
Yes.
Disappeared from Black's Law Dictionary.
Interesting. Why do you think that is, after all these years?
Well, I think a lot of people were catching on to a lot of fraud going on.
Mm-hmm.
But all through Title 28, you will find the federal government actually referred to as United States. Okay? But in Title 28 as well, in Section 1746, there are two paragraphs, 1 and 2. And this is the only place in that whole title where there's a distinction made between United States of America and United States.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So these are two separate entities. And you might say, I guess, the United States of America, and by the way, that's the plaintiff in all cases against people regarding the income tax. That's the plaintiff. Well, what is this entity? Well, that's being challenged in court. And we'll have to wait and see how that comes out.
Yes.
But United States attorneys do not have power of attorney to represent the Internal Revenue Service.
Uh-huh.
There's a court case, and it was in Idaho. I don't know if I can find it or not. Diversified Metals, the T-Bow, and the IRS. In paragraph 4 of one of the pleadings, the United States attorneys from the Department of Justice.
Right. By the way, if anybody has any questions or statements to Dave, you can call 559-781-3773. That's 559-781-3773. Continue, Dave.
Right. That diversified case, the United States attorneys, employees of the Department of Justice, stated that the Internal Revenue Service is not an agency of the United States government. The proper party to this case is the United States of America. Now, just what do they mean by that? Well, we're going to find out sooner or later.
Sooner more than later.
Let's hope so. There's a certain court case I'm thinking of. But anyway, it's important for one to know their status. Are they a federal citizen? Well, if they choose to be a federal citizen, I would be my opinion that they could not claim to be free at all. They're nothing more than subjects of Congress.
Mm.
And here's an interesting thing. It's called the Clearfield Doctrine, if I could find it. I can't lay my hands on it just a second, but anyway, when government reduces itself to to the use of, it's really saying Federal Reserve notes and so on, then they have reduced themselves to the status of anyone and are not even, cannot even claim to be the government at that point.
Well, we're dealing with sovereignty now.
Well, are people sovereign or are they not? It's up to the, it's their choice, Chris, but it depends on how they, have they made any record that would satisfy admissible proof as to what their status is?
I don't know. I doubt it.
Because the law of presumption, you know, judges are known to take silent judicial notice that all Americans coming before them are 14th Amendment citizens of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Unless first rebutted by a greater weight or preponderance of evidence which disproves or outweighs rebuts the presumption. And that's the purpose of an affidavit, to establish facts on the record. An affidavit is one of four ways to get your evidence on the record in court before you ever see the courtroom. So, I'm doing a workshop, by the way, the 21st of August in Fayetteville, that will teach people how to write a proper notice and a proper affidavit and a proper Freedom of Information Act request, which is one great way to get admissible evidence by their own hand, okay?
Uh-huh.
For instance, there was a Freedom of Information Act done to the Arkansas Commissioner of Revenue. This is, though, a couple of years ago. And guess what? By their own admission, they have no oath of office. Are they not civil officers? Well, the federal and state constitution mandates that civil officers have an oath of office on file. So what does that mean when they don't? Well, their acts are just usurpations, because their office is actually vacant.
Uh-huh.
So, creating proper paperwork, I think, is essential if one really wishes to stand up on their hind feet and act like a free man. Talk's cheap.
Right.
Takes action.
Well, be sure to give out this address and the way for people to find out more about this. And there is a direction on our website in the solutions section, right at the top, listeners, solutions, listeners. It's right underneath that little thing called other links, which is very, very important. Other links is vitally important. So you click onto solutions at the bottom, and you'll see Dave's information. And it's quite revealing, to the point where you want to go to regain your sovereignty. And your address is contact Dave Wilson at reclaimer4u, the number 4u, at netscape.net. And that's the best way to contact you.
Right. Well, Chris, you know, liberty is the right to choose. Freedom results in making the right choice.
Yeah, and, you know, at this stage, boy, I tell you, it's very, very, very complex for a lot of people to even survive today with the Federal Reserve debt note system that we live in.
That's the root cause of the whole problem.
I'm sorry to say.
And the IRS is nothing but a collection agency for a private banking cartel that pays the interest to these mostly foreign bankers. You know the Grace Commission that President Reagan put in place?
Yes.
To examine the fraud, or waste in government, rather.
Uh-huh.
And you know, they made a public statement that said, you know, not one nickel of the income tax money collected here goes to the federal government to pay for services people expect. It goes to pay the interest on the debt.
It goes to pay the interest on the debt?
I.e., it goes to the International Monetary Fund is where it's really going, Chris.
The IMF of
yeah.
the UN.
Yeah. Ain't that nice?
I know. There's the problem.
Right on.
The revenuers for the IMF.
You know, this young man wrote a fantastic treatise, oh, golly, over 450 years ago, called The Politics of Voluntary Servitude. You know, involuntary servitude is constitutionally and statutorily prohibited, but there's no law against voluntary servitude now, is there?
No. And this is why I say the U.S. is us, or the U.N. is us.
Mm-hmm.
We are the U.N. system.
Well, not for me.
Yeah.
Not for me, because I owe them no allegiance, and I owe the current federal government no allegiance either. They have descended into nothing but a criminal enterprise. And that's my opinion.
Right. Which is everyone's ability to do, providing they take the proper steps, correct?
Well, you know, words without actions or exercises in futility are just pure impotence,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We've had years of indoctrination, and there's where the problem lies.
What was it? Was that Lenin that said, just give me one generation?
One of them.
That's all I need.
I think we're into the second generation, aren't we?
Or third.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And this is why so many are so complacent and compliant to march off to war wherever they're told to go as a mercenary military for the U.N. system.
Well, I think Charlotte Isby just hits the X-ring right in the middle of the bullseye.
Mm-hmm.
The deliberate dumbing down of America.
Yes. Which, for certain, started in the early 1930s.
John Dewey.
Mm. And even before the 1930s.
Yeah.
Turn of the century. Turn of the 20th century, listeners, John Dewey.
Well, there was a great mass misinformation, disinformation, and writing of history books, and always the conqueror writes the history, right?
That's true.
And that was during the Reconstruction era in this country. They sure reconstructed it all right, didn't they?
They reconstructed it into their militaristic police state, and that was the Civil War.
You bet. Well, Ralph Winterud up in Anchorage on his website, JUSBELLI.com.
Mm-hmm.
He has a book that's in PDF format that can be downloaded and printed out. It's War Powers Under the Constitution. It was written by William Whiting in 1871, as a matter of fact, the 14th printing of it. And he was Lincoln's solicitor to the War Department. And he worked with Lieber, of course. You've heard of the Lieber Code.
The Lieber Code. Let's talk about that in a minute. I don't want to keep you any more than you want to, but we need to talk about the Lieber Code, listeners. And we'll be back to continue with Dave Wilson. He's in the new section, Solutions, Frankly Speaking Radio Articles by Dave Wilson. Listeners, we'll be right back.
Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
In America, we value our liberty. But there's a new movement quietly being pursued by politicians that will take away our precious freedoms. It's been deceptively named the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA. Proponents claim that their objective is to promote trade by removing barriers between the countries of North and South America. In reality, the FTAA is a raw power grab. It will lead to a new government over the entire Western Hemisphere. This super government will steadily take away America's rights, our Constitution, even the freedoms that we love so dearly. Protect your freedoms. Go to stoptheftaa.org. Then let Congress know that the FTAA is not an option for America. Stoptheftaa.org. And keep America free.
If you read the history books, the most often asked questions of Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War and the Right of Succession from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free, or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Okay, welcome back to the broadcast. The Libra Code, Dave, once again, and people, Solutions is on the website AmericanExpose.com. We're bypassing much news and information that Dennis and Darren have put up on the website. I want you to pay attention to that. The uncovering of this deception that we live, the Hegelian dialectic, is very, very apparent on the website, but I want to continue with Dave and the Libra Code. Continue.
Right. During Reconstruction,
1865 and on.
Right. The 39th and 40th Congress destroyed the our Constitutional Republic with these so-called Reconstruction Acts. The first one was the Civil Rights Act of 1866. And there were several of the Reconstruction Acts, and each one of them President Andrew Johnson vetoed as unconstitutional. The same day Congress overrode his veto. Those laws are still on the books, okay? And what happened in 1867 was the an amendment to the Constitution was proposed. That was the 14th Amendment, which created a new class of citizenship that didn't exist prior to that. Okay, that's the federal citizen or citizen of the United States, and it says all persons born in the United States or naturalized therein and subject to its jurisdiction are citizens of the United States. And that's a small c. When you look in the original Constitution, when you see citizen, it's capitalized. That means it's a proper noun. Okay, and there were only citizens of the states then. The states had the power to determine who their citizens were. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And so on and so forth. So, the Libra Code, I believe, was written in, let's see, 1863, I believe. Okay, Libra was a German, and William Whiting was, these were attorneys, okay?
Right.
Also on Ralph's website, you'll find the Attorney General's opinion of 1867. And it's not all that long, but...
Which Attorney General were we talking about?
That was the then Attorney General in 1867.
Okay, very good.
And that was his instructions to the generals in the field, because the southern states had been... brought back into the so-called Union in order to ratify the new 13th Amendment. The original 13th Amendment had disappeared somehow, okay, and it had been ratified. And that was the so-called Titles of Nobility Amendment that had teeth in it. Anybody accepting a title of nobility or honor lost their citizenship immediately. They did not like attorneys back then.
I wonder why.
Because the colonists had experienced the usurpation and the evilness of these people.
The duplicity.
Yes, back then. Yes.
Uh-huh.
So anyway...
They always use lawyers to take over countries, and then once the countries are taken over, the lawyers are killed.
Right, so...
It's happened in communist China.
Yes, sir. There was one of two reasons that Lincoln was murdered. One was the fact that he issued greenbacks. No interest to the bankers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, treasury notes. Okay. And that was one reason. The other reason was that he wanted to bring the South back into the Union in its antebellum pre-war state. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Congress didn't like that at all. They wanted to punish the South, these radicals, Republican Party radicals.
Mm-hmm.
Then passed these laws that imposed a military government on the southern states for 12 years in time of peace. So that's why it's important to read the Attorney General's opinion of 1867, because you're going to find out just what they can do. There's no limit to what they can do. In fact, martial law is such that there is no civil law. It's whatever the military commander wants to dictate.
And it's been that way since that time, 1865.
Roughly, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. So there are actually two constitutions now. You have our organic constitution with the lawful amendments, the Bill of Rights, for instance. But the 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th Amendments were never, ever lawfully ratified.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Constitution that they're going by now, which created a new class of citizen that didn't exist before. But the 14th Amendment, it's in the congressional record. There's a Utah Supreme Court case of Dietz v. Turner. It plainly stated nobody in their right mind could ever claim this amendment was lawfully ratified.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many people out there that claim they know and don't, and there's where the crux lies.
Well, was that Van Gogh that said that the most effective form of slavery is when the slaves believe they're free?
Yeah, the perfect slave believes he is free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yep, we were born into a lie. And to erase that is, it entails some work, doesn't it, Dave?
Oh, boy, howdy. This thing of person being a legal fiction,
mm-hmm.
i.e. a corporation,
right.
Okay. Here's what a United States Supreme Court case back in 1894 in Cahaw v. United States says: restricts jurisdiction of the federal government inside the states. The law of Congress in respect to those matters do not extend into the territorial limits of the states, but have force only in the District of Columbia and other places that are within the exclusive jurisdiction of the national government. So where does IRS get off thinking they have jurisdiction? They don't. And I love this case here. It's a 1906 U.S. Supreme Court case of Hale v. Henkel, which defined the distinction between natural persons and corporations as it pertains to Fifth Amendment protections within the U.S. Constitution. Quoting, "We are of the opinion that there is a clear distinction in this particular between an individual and a corporation, and that the latter has no right to refuse to submit its books and papers for an examination at the suit of the state. The individual may stand upon his constitutional rights as a citizen. He is entitled to carry on his private business in his own way. His power to contract is unlimited. He owes no duty to the state or to his neighbors to divulge his business or to open his doors to an investigation so far as it may tend to incriminate him. He owes no duty to the state since he receives nothing therefrom beyond the protection of his life and property. His rights are such as existed by the law of the land long antecedent to the organization of the state and can only be taken from him by due process of law and in accordance with the Constitution. Among his rights are a refusal to incriminate himself and the immunity of himself and his property from arrest or seizure except under a warrant of the law. He owes nothing to the public so long as he does not trespass upon their rights." Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely so.
That is just amazing. There have been some good cases that have come down through the years and so on.
They go by rulings from the past to make their rulings to the present, correct?
Well, part of the problem arose in 1938 in the Supreme Court case of Erie Railroad v. Tompkins, where federal common law was abolished. It overturned a 100-year-old case that was adjudicated upon common law. And it threw it out, and things have been downhill big time ever since in the federal court system. That's now so corrupt it just stinks to high heaven. And
it's scary today.
Paul Andrew Mitchell via FOIAs has the proof that three of the U.S. Supreme Court justices are not qualified. They have no presidential commission or oath of office. And also half the federal judges in Southern California, he found, have no qualifications either. They're usurpers. So the federal judiciary has been infiltrated, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another website that that I think is quite good. It's if one wishes to win without a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
called jurisdictionary.com, JurisDictionary.com. And that's Frederick Graves, who he's been a lawyer well over 20 years. But right at the top of his webpage, it says, "Protect yourself from other members of my profession."
Mm-hmm.
And he teaches you how to win.
Really?
To go into court and win without a lawyer.
Yeah.
I don't like that term pro se. It actually should be in propria persona, in your proper person. I don't even like the word person. So be careful how we use that one.
Jurisdictionary?
Mm-hmm.
Jurisdictionary.
.com.
JurisDictionary.
.com. Right. And up at the top, you'll see the letters A through Z.
Uh-huh.
And that's a free little law dictionary right there.
I see.
And he does give seminars and so on and so forth. But his the CDs that he has, these are tutorials and seminars, audio, video, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
They are just very, very excellent.
I see. Where does the U.S. Code fit into all this, Dave?
All right. There's only one U.S. code that happens to have 50 titles. Okay?
Uh-huh. Is Title II one of them? Title 22?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Title 26 is the Internal Revenue Code. Title 31 is the Department of Treasury.
What kind of surprises would we find in Title 26? I wonder.
Well, you first, I would suggest to first go to Title 26, Section 7701, and there you will find the definitions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So learn the legal definitions. You have to know the definitions, otherwise you might as well be reading Chinese.
Good point.
7701, I have it right here. When used in this title, were not otherwise distinctly expressed or manifestly incompatible with the intent thereof. One, person. The term person shall be construed to mean and include an individual, a trust, a state, partnership, association, company, or corporation. And the closest thing one can find to the definition of individual might be non-resident alien or a foreign corporation, maybe. The term, here's paragraph 9, United States. The term United States, when used in a geographical sense, includes only the states and the District of Columbia. The word states is capitalized, okay?
Okay.
Which makes it a proper noun, correct?
Right.
All right, the very next one says state. The term state, capitalized, shall be construed to include the District of Columbia, where such construction is necessary to carry out provisions of this title. This title, in my opinion, Chris,
uh-huh,
is nothing more than a municipal code of Washington, D.C., period.
Uh-huh.
That's it. Does not pertain to the states. It cannot.
And there's where the problem lies.
Mm-hmm. Here's the term taxpayer. This is the other famous deceptive word. Every communication they have, they address people as taxpayer. You sign a 1040 under penalty of perjury on a line,
right.
Taxpayer. The term taxpayer means any person subject to any internal revenue tax. Well, gosh, oh, gee, there's only 8 classes of taxes administered by the IRS, but there's 80 different taxes, okay? So when they said send you a notice of deficiency, they don't even tell you what they're even talking about as far as any specific tax is concerned.
Well, and, you know, this is where we go to the Handbook for Special Agents.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen it.
I haven't.
And they talk about the fact that our tax system is based on individual self-assessment and voluntary compliance. And they say the material contained in this handbook is confidential in character.
Mm-hmm.
It must not, under any circumstance, be made available to persons outside the service.
Right.
Which means that the income tax is voluntary.
How about
and a sham?
Paragraph 16 says withholding agent. Now listen up, folks. The term withholding agent means any person required to deduct and withhold any tax under the provisions of section 1441, 42, 43, or 1461. And you know what all those four pertain to? Nothing more than non-resident aliens and foreign corporations.
Uh-huh.
The private corporation that most people work for are not a lawful legal withholding agent. And the W-4 they shove at you happens to be a tax class 5, which is an estate or gift tax. It has nothing to do with income tax.
Now, the withholding tax situation that Dixon Cannon was under, and he's serving time for...
They really got him for something else, I think. I think he made a mistake when he demanded refunds of all that money that had been withheld.
Oh.
I think that's where they nailed him.
Oh.
He just should have been bit the bullet and gone on his way. Now, here's a court case.
We don't want people going to the pokey under certain situations,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you've got straw man, you have all sorts of different directions mm-hmm. that people declare their sovereignty, but there's a lot of people that are serving time in prison.
Mm-hmm. You know, people have sent perfectly legitimate questions to the IRS.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? They don't respond, do they?
They don't respond at all.
Well, listen to this court case. Silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot condone this shocking conduct by the IRS. Our revenue system is based upon the good faith of the taxpayers, and the taxpayers should be able to expect the same from government in its enforcement and collection activities. This sort of deception will not be tolerated, and if this is the routine, it should be corrected immediately. U.S. v. Tweel, quoting U.S. v. Pruden. Those are 1977 and 70 cases. And this one is quite good. This is a 1906 case, Carmen v. Bowen. Silence is a species of conduct and constitutes an implied representation of the existence of the state of facts in question. And the estoppel is accordingly a species of estoppel by misrepresentation. When silence is of such a character and under such circumstances that it would become a fraud upon the other party to permit the party who has kept silent to deny what his silence has induced the other to believe and act upon, it will operate as an estoppel. An estoppel is a bar to any further action. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, these people can be properly noticed. And you can set things up so that if you send them a notice, for instance, and I kind of knew there was something wrong over a year ago when it, you know, people would send notices and they would get no response, right?
Right.
So I developed a procedure that I call perfection of notice procedure. The word perfect means to complete, such as perfect a title, you know.
Uh-huh.
If you don't perfect a title, if you don't perfect an appeal, it's out the window because it wasn't completed. So when the notice goes unrebutted, unanswered by silence, that's going to trigger an affidavit of non-response. And second opportunity for rebuttal, okay?
Uh-huh.
They don't respond to that one in the stated time that you allow them, like 30 days, then that will trigger an affidavit of refusal to rebut, da-da-da, whatever the case may be there. So now you've made a record. And affidavits, when properly done, are admitted on the record as testimony in court before you ever even get there.
Amazing. Now, before we run out of time, this seminar you're teaching, once again, when is that going to be?
It'll be Sunday, August the 21st. And if those that want any further information, just send me an email. It's on Chris's website there.
Reclaimer, number 4, U. That's Reclaimer, Reclaimer. The number 4, this, and then U, the U, the letter U, at netscape.net.
That'll work, Chris.
Okay, that's Reclaimer for You at Netscape.net. It'll be August 23rd.
21st.
August 21st.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that takes a lot of effort on your behalf, so we're hoping that people will support you in your direction. Most important to do so.
Oh, by the way, could I throw a couple more of these legal definitions?
Why not?
right out of Title 26, 7701.
Let's have it.
Paragraph 26, trade or business. Oh, engaged in a trade or business. The term trade or business includes the performance of the functions of a public office, i.e. government.
Uh-huh.
So do you carry on a trade or business within the United States? And those are two terms one needs to really get up to speed with, that term within the United States and without the United States. And paragraph 30, United States person. The term United States person means a citizen or resident of the United States, B, a domestic partnership, C, a domestic corporation, D, any estate, E, any trust, if a court, da-da-da, and so on and so on. So are you a U.S. person? Don't think so. Not unless one wants to claim to be a citizen or resident of the United States. Do you live in Washington, D.C.? Or the Virgin Islands or Puerto Rico or somewhere like that?
There you go.
No, don't think so.
Washington, D.C. and its territories.
The Washington District are criminals.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, any vote that any of those people make for CAFTA tomorrow, that is, in my opinion, a declaration of war against all decent Americans, and it's an act of treason.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it any better than myself. And they did the same thing 10 years ago with NAFTA.
That none of them even read.
And GATT.
Yeah.
And
right.
WTO that resulted from GATT, which has been an mm-hmm. established organization through to a treaty, General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, since 1947. So
right. You used to have a link on your website to Barefoot Bob.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
He used to have the Bar Treaty of 1947.
There you go.
And it's the American Bar Association throwing its full weight behind the U.N.
Yeah. We got to cook that up again.
And I would say that the American Bar Association really is, in actuality, just the American chapter of the Lawyers Guild of England.
Yeah, and we are the U.N. system.
Follow the money trail, Chris, and it'll lead you right straight to the City of London.
There it is.
The House of Rothschild in the Bank of England.
I'm sorry to say you're right. According to certain people, owning 52% of the Federal Reserve System. So there's the leader of the whole deal.
Well, let's not forget Rockefeller.
There you go. And that's just the...
Which means the Council on Foreign Relations.
Amen. Well, that was a great hour, Dave. I appreciate you coming with me tonight.
Hey, thank you, Chris. God bless you.
Thank you. Yeah. Privilege to be with you.
Well, it's my honor, Chris. Thank you so much.
Okay, Dave. We'll keep doing this.
Okay, good night.
Bye-bye now. Listeners, that's it for now. Just amazing stuff, as usual. But keep looking at those updates on American Exposé. Much information going on. Good evening.
This is Nicholas from Presence of God Ministry. Are you a believer that is looking for a way to understand Bible prophecy as it pertains to historic as well as current events? Do you believe a one-world government is predicted in the Bible to occur in our day? Do you want to know what the Bible says about the Vatican's role in all of this? Are you one that believes no prophecy of the Bible is of any personal interpretation, as 2 Peter 1:20 declares? And are you also one that understands all the symbols in prophecy